Hello, welcome to this episode of the REBT Advocates with Dr. Michael R. Edelstein of 3MinuteTherapy.com. You can find this book, 3-Minute Therapy, Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life, at therebt.life. And me, Tommy Bateman, I am a counselor based out of the Richmond, Virginia area. You can find out how to contact us below. You can send your hate and your love and your questions to rebtadvocates@gmail.com. And in fact, we had a listener send one in. This one's actually an old, older email, and we answered him before, but Mr. Tendler, I think he's up in New York, if I remember correctly, sent us three questions a while ago. We wanted to get to the one of those that he sent, a really good one. But before we do so, Michael, do you have anything you want to add?
Yes, I would like to add a formal introduction of myself. I'm Dr. Michael Edelstein. I have 40 years experience helping people with REBT, and I love doing it. And as Tommy said, you can find my link, my practice link and my 3-Minute Therapy link in the description below.
Excellent. Excellent. So I'll just jump into the question. Mr. Tendler, Sean, you asked this: how does REBT address individuals whose unhealthy negative emotions seemingly do not stem from irrational beliefs, or when specific activating events or adversities are difficult to pinpoint? Sometimes I have clients that already have pretty rational cognitions and beliefs, but don't have much, if any, triggering situational factors going on, but yet still intensely feel depressed and or anxious on a purely emotional and or physical level. For instance, they are fully aware and maybe even already internalized effective, healthy, rational beliefs, but just can't shake the more visceral experience of feeling really drained and depressed or keyed up and anxious. Michael, that's a good one. What do you got for me?
Yeah, great. And thank you again, Sean, for sending in these questions. And we can remind the viewers to send in any questions you have related to REBT, and we will certainly consider fielding them in an episode. So the first part of the question, Tommy, is how does REBT address individuals whose unhealthy negative emotions seemingly do not stem from irrational beliefs? Mm-hmm. So the emphasis is on seemingly, but as we know, as Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher, taught, as Albert Ellis taught, and many of the wise people taught, that our emotions, whether healthy or unhealthy, come from our thinking. So it's very suspect if someone says it's not related to my beliefs. Mm-hmm. So don't take that at face value, but look below that. And often when someone isn't aware of what they're thinking that's causing their emotion, they have a secondary disturbance that's more abstract than a primary disturbance. And a secondary disturbance means they're upset about being upset. So it's not about a physical event externally in their environment, but it's about an emotion. I must not be so anxious. I must get over my anger, or even with behaviors. I should not have drunk myself to oblivion last night. Those are all secondary disturbances. And so you can suggest that to yourself or to your clients when you have difficulty identifying your irrational belief. Another thing you can do is have them list the situation that they're finding themselves in, and then often you can insert the should. So for example, the situation might be, I drank too much last night and I should not have, or my wife criticized me as she should not do, or I was procrastinating all morning as I should not. So if you list the situation, often there's a should or a must or a have to in there, and that leads to emotional disturbance.
Yeah. And I 100% on board with that. And I have not much to add when it comes to the tactic there, but I do want to talk about the premise of the question when it comes to unhealthy negative emotions versus healthy ones. For example, it is, well, we know the dividing line. It's really whether or not it's based off of a irrational belief or not. So healthy ones, typically healthy negative emotions like sadness or grief after a loss or something like that, are typically based off of a healthy or rational belief. And if it's based off a rational belief, then it's healthy. And I really don't want to counsel somebody out of that necessarily on its face. Now, if they're upset about having a healthy negative emotion, then we can talk about it. But yeah, just we want to know the dividing line between unhealthy and healthy. Just being sad doesn't mean they need counseling, if you know what I mean. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, that's a good point. And another way to describe healthy versus unhealthy, or helpful versus unhelpful, or adaptive versus unadaptive, is to ask, are these emotions and thoughts interfering with blocking or sabotaging my long-term goals? Yeah. If they are, then you probably have demands in there. If not, then probably you don't. You have preferences.
Exactly. Good dividing line there.
Then he goes on to say, as you read, Tommy, or when specific activating events or adversities are difficult to pinpoint. So we would just addressing when B, the irrational belief, is difficult to pinpoint. Now we're going to A, the activating event is difficult to pinpoint. And one of the main things you can do is just write down what's been happening recently. Mm-hmm. For example, I just got fired and I was working on finding a job. So that's the activating event. And then maybe there's a, that's it. Maybe that's the activating event, the event about which you're disturbed. Another thing you can do is just take a guess what it might be. Do a 3-minute exercise. That's the A, B, C, D, E, F of REBT. Do that and see if it's meaningful or not. If it's meaningful, then probably you identified the right activating event. If it's not, then use trial and error and take another guess.
There's no reason why you can't just keep doing the process until something clicks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on to say, sometimes I have clients that already have pretty rational cognitions and beliefs. Yes, that often happens. They know the rational beliefs. In fact, sometimes they could write a book on thinking rationally. They know it so well, but they haven't gone to level two thinking. I distinguish between level one versus level two thinking. Level one thinking is where you superficially recognize that your must or should or have to is false. But level two, which makes all the difference, is where you internalize it. You feel it, you act on it. It's in your brain, just like English is in your brain. If you speak another language, that language is in your brain. It's in your brain. That's the way you see the world without the musts and shoulds. That's level two thinking. So my first try would be that they have the rational thoughts, but they're not deep. They're not profound. And the way to get from level one to level two thinking is through practice, repetition, reinforcement, going over a better perspective again and again and again. And we discuss on previous episodes various ways to do that.
Yes. Yeah. Disputing and exposure are kind of my big things. But yeah, definitely.
Could you explain what you mean by exposure, Tommy?
So for example, you're let's say you're at the level one, you understand it, you get it, you're trying to internalize it. And what I have often recommended is maybe if it's something that can be handled without a severe reaction, putting yourself in the situation that typically would have led you down a irrational B. But while you're in that situation, remind yourself of the rational B because you've consciously put yourself in the situation and practice having the more rational thought while experiencing the previously unbearable activating event.
Right. For example, if you have a fear of taking elevators, take the elevator 20 times in an hour. Yep. And do exactly as Tommy suggests. Work on your thinking and convince yourself over and over again. The world's not going to come in come to an end. The worst that's likely to happen is the elevator stops briefly. And if it stops longer than that, then I can do some meditation or call someone. Sometimes there's a phone in the elevator that you could call. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, they'll get you out.
Yeah. Think of the brain like a muscle. You expose the muscle to resistance and exhaustion, and it changes the muscle. Same thing with the brain, pretty much. Exposing it to things that would, it's uncomfortable to the brain, for lack of a better way of putting it, and it will shape itself after repetition and repetition.
Right. Along with what you said earlier, Tommy, practicing thinking more reasonably about it, there's a famous case of Helen Hayes, who was a very well-known actress in the 30s and 40s, and there's a theater named after her on Broadway in New York called the Helen Hayes Theater. Mm-hmm. And she was quite renowned, but she reported that she was anxious, sometimes panicked, right before she went on stage. And she mm-hmm. did that for years and years and years. Well, why didn't she get over her anxiety? Because she didn't change her thinking. And she probably said, I know I did okay in the past, but I must have a guarantee I'll do fine this time, not fall flat on my face. And if I do, it would be awful, terrible, and horrible. So it's important when you put yourself in those situations, when you use exposure, to work on changing your thinking also. So I second what you said about that, Tommy.
Good point. So Sean said something like, unless the premise of his overall question too is, let's say their cognitions are great. Let's say they're level two thinking and they're really not experiencing any activating events, but they still have this feeling of depression or anxiety. Is that premise even possibly true?
It could be true in the sense that what they're interpreting in their body as depression, anxiety, is not. Mm-hmm. For example, they could have a low set point for energy mm-hmm. and not be very energetic or enthusiastic or passionate about things. And they interpret that as psychological depression.
Yes.
But the way to identify whether it's just physiological or psychological is to try to identify what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Now, let's suppose your set point is low for energy and passion. With hard and persistent work at it, you could raise your set point mm-hmm. by practicing pushing yourself to act energetically and pushing yourself to do rather than stew. Then with hard work, you can raise your set point. So it's not necessarily hopeless if that's the case.
Yeah. And really, and RBT will help you getting over the procrastination or the uncomfortability of dealing with that pushing. And I'm glad, Michael, you differentiated between physiological and psychological. And I really think the mental health world doesn't often do a good job of differentiating the two. Sometimes a person does have very healthy cognitions, yet feels that depression where you just want to sleep all the time, you're tired, it's hard to get motivated because of you're just tired, don't feel good. Well, that's when I'm looking at, let's refer you to a physician. You might have a thyroid issue. You might need an antidepressant. Hey, you might be out of shape and things like that. So that's when we start looking at external things, and I'm looking at, you know, referrals as a practical solution to the physiological problem. Anxiety has a genetic factor. So if you have a, for example, if you're female and your, you know, genetic history is anxious people, then or people that experience anxiety at a strong degree, then that's something to look at as well. That's if they're having healthy cognitions, but otherwise still feel physically like they have a problem, then it's no longer a counseling or therapy, a psychological therapy issue. That's when I start to refer out. At least that's what I think.
That makes sense. Yeah. And he also says, and this is sort of a repeat of his earlier part of the question, mm-hmm. they don't have much, if any, triggering situational factors going on. Well, in that case, look for a secondary disturbance. You're upset about being upset or anxious about being anxious. So that that is a good way to address that.
And that's true. Well, they're still showing up, aren't they? For a reason. Not much is going on, but I'm here in the counseling room. Well, that's
right. So look internally.
Yep.
Could be about your emotions that you're upset about rather than something going on externally.
Mm-hmm.
And then another part of his question is, they are fully aware and maybe even have already internalized effective, healthy, rational beliefs. Well, we address that to some extent with level one versus level two thinking. Mm-hmm. And so distinguish between in theory and in practice. So in theory, you might think nothing's going to kill you if you jump off the high diving board in the swimming pool. But then when you get up to the top of the, to the end of the high diving board and you look down, then you could get very anxious. You make yourself anxious about that. So in theory, you recognize it's not the end of the world if you jump, but you haven't gotten into practice. It's not level two thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, the last part is, they just can't shake the more visceral experience of feeling really drained and depressed or keyed up and anxious. Well, one problem that jumps out is the can't. If you believe I can't change this, then you make it into a self-fulfilling prophecy and you don't try and you give up. So again, if you think, so the truth is you haven't succeeded yet, but that doesn't mean you can't succeed in the future. So that means working hard, persistently, vigorously, meaningfully on uprooting, getting rid of your musts and shoulds.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in those cases, kind of going back to what I said earlier too, for that last bit, breaking it apart, using even the problem separation technique, you have an emotional and a practical problem here, or we can just separate it differently. You have a cognitive and a physiological problem. If we solve the cognitive and the physiological still problematic, go to a doctor. Or something.
Okay,
else.
Great. That's I've run out of comments on Sean's great questions. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you guys for emailing us these great questions, because hey, you help us fill in topics which we need.
Yes, and topics that are meaningful to you. So if you enjoyed this episode, comment below, tell us, give us a like. If you didn't enjoy it, tell us, comment below, ask us more questions, suggest subjects, volunteer. You can come on with us and you'll get two brilliant REBT therapists for the price of one and no charge. Donate to Patreon to help support us and subscribe to the REBT Advocates to stay on the rational side of life.